Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 434 of the Roguecast, recorded October 3rd, 2023. You would never defeat my sun people. Dave's back.
I'm back. I am bringing Seattle and Washington in general's weather with me in a few days. It's going to arrive a few days late.
Boo.
But when you get it by the end of this week, nobody's talking to me. I was talking to Nick alone.
If you think 77 is, like, boo-worthy, then you need to, like, readjust your...
I'm already sad to be losing the warm weather I'm feeling outside. I know Ready? What's coming.
Do you like the, scorching warmth? Or do you like the fact that it's more like clear skies and you can just do stuff more readily?
I like the clear skies.
Do you care about weather at all?
As long as it's warm enough, I don't care.
Okay. But you need to have AC, though, right?
Yes.
If you didn't have AC, it would suddenly become less cool.
I would like it less if it was 100 degrees and I had no AC.
Just checking. Yep. Just figuring out my argument for the legal strategy later.
Look, if we could magically have it rain only at night when I'm not out doing anything... and then it would not leave. It would not wouldn't hail, wouldn't leak, wouldn't destroy anything. But would in fact only provide the good water.
Yeah,
that would be good.
That bitter juice.
I would like the weather system to work like it did in Back to the Future 2. Reliable, programmed by robots, run by AI and giant holographic.
Randy is ready for Skynet's future.
I am.
I just want the Weather Dominator.
Y'all don't want me to have the Weather Dominator. It's never going to be below 75 ever again.
Well, you would not have the Weather Dominator for long, because an uprising would occur.
No, my desert troops would win over all of you.
They'd be too weakened by the heat rays.
That's right. You would never defeat my sun people.
But I understand, y'all did a baby podcast last week.
We did. We ran like 20 minutes. It's very short.
And although we don't have a ton of time, we're going to do a big boy podcast this week.
We got to
talk about, like, lots of new games, lots of new trailers. The Transformers comic came out this week, and we all really loved it. And there's all sorts of things
and
to talk about.
And it's spooky season, so we're going to start talking about some horror movies and stuff.
Spooky season, yeah. Why don't we just jump right in?
Let's jump right in. Okay, so new games this week. We just got the expansions for the Aliens co-op game.
There's three different ones.
That is a tabletop board game that's like a skirmish game?
No, you're trying to escape the alien. There's like different scenarios and stuff, but it's not skirmishy so much as... I mean, you're not like... I don't think one person's playing the aliens. I think the aliens are like the NPCs.
Like AI run or something like that? Or
kind of like
algorithm-y
kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know. I haven't played it, but it's supposed to be a really good co-op game. Anyway, the expansions are We're in the Pipe 5x5, which introduces the two pilots.
Yep,
yep.
Get Away From Her, You Bitch.
Yep.
Which introduces the Power Loader, as well as the Alien Queen and four new maps.
Yep.
And then Ultimate Badasses, which has the Space Marines.
Yeah, the Clone Marines.
I do love that they're just cursing in the titles now.
Yeah. Clearly fans of the movie.
Yeah.
So that's very cool.
Well, I remember this board game being pretty, like, touted as being...
It was supposed to be very popular.
Yeah, very popular, so it's kind of cool to get three expansions.
Yeah. In the role-playing world, we got D&D Lore and Legends, a visual celebration of the 5th edition of the world's greatest role-playing game.
Yeah, it's kind of like a coffee table book.
It is a big, giant... Yes, it's got art from various editions, a lot of write-ups of the history of the game, as it sort of tracks the birth of D&D 5e.
Did I see some photos in there, too?
There are some photos.
Maps.
I saw, as you know, I'm super happy. You see the Big Bang Theory represented, as always.
Is community represented?
If nothing else, it earned its place.
Yeah.
Is community represented?
I didn't
Big Bang
pictures.
Theory is in there?
There's a lot of pictures. But I also saw, like, Critical Roles in there.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. There's a page there where they show how they came up with the D&D sort of stylized logo, the and part and the D's and stuff, and how they... There's, like, a lot of different variations before they arrived at the final version. That's pretty cool.
This does seem to be specifically about 5th edition.
Right.
Which is interesting. And I look through, and it's very cool looking. I'm very tempted by this.
Yeah, there's like, some lots of fun, like, on the sort of more realistic side of art, but I saw some fun bits of cartoony art, too.
This looks like the awesome gift for anyone you know who likes D&D.
Yeah.
You might not buy it for themselves, but it's the awesome gift to have.
Your holiday gift now.
It is, in fact, October, so it's time to start thinking about Christmas shopping.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's true for the people that do that stuff.
Well, people work in retail.
Yeah.
And then we got Borderlands, Mr. Torg's Arena of Badassery. Second reference to Badassery in our games this week.
It's clearly a thing.
This is the Borderlands skirmish game by the guys who do Zombicide and okay. that kind
of
stuff.
What's next, Randy? Settlers of Badassery?
Settlers of Badassery. we got Expeditions, which is the much-anticipated sequel to Scythe.
Yep.
Which is, if you don't know it, the game of, like, an alternate, like, 1920s Russia where they have, like, mechs.
Yeah.
And animal companions. The Expeditions has a walking bear with a backpack on it.
Yep.
But these are also primarily kind of like worker placement games where you're actually, a lot of the mechs are like doing farming work and agrarian things.
Yeah, it's not battle mechs, really.
Yeah, and yet, even though that sounds like, A, it could be boring, super fun game,
yep.
very, like, real depth to it, and an amazing visuals. The artist who paints all these covers and stuff for it
yeah.
has these, like, visions that, like, they could be a movie. And so the sequel, what kind of game is it?
So Expeditions is it's another resource management, but it's got, like, tiles, so, like, the map changes.
Mm-hmm.
It has some different mechanics. I've heard really good things. I think the reviews on it are pretty good.
Nice.
I've not got a chance to play it yet, but it's been highly anticipated, so I'm looking forward to checking that one out. We also got a game called Spellbook, which is from the Space Cowboy, these guys who did Splendor. And which I don't know if you know Splendor, but it is a very popular game
mm-hmm.
in which you play gem merchants. This one, you are, it's a puzzle dueling game. You are each powerful wizards in pursuit of elemental magic. I have not had a chance to play this one yet either, but it looks really interesting. The designer has worked on things like Baron Park, Sushi Go, Gizmos, so some good games.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to check this one out as well. We got the new edition of Stardew Valley,
yep.
the board game for that, which Stardew Valley is a game in which you have a farm, I think.
I believe it is a, not thematic, what do they call a spiritual successor to Harvest Moon?
Okay.
A chill game, right?
Yeah, one of those chill games like Animal Crossing and stuff like that. I'm sure it was for the Switch. Maybe other systems too.
The pandemic surviving game.
But, yes. but, so, yeah, so, cool. This is, did you say a sequel to, or was it
no, this is the
it's
new
a new
edition.
Edition.
Okay, new edition. Got it.
There's a new game from Pandasaurus called Q-Birds, where you group birds into flocks and help them find their way back to their nest.
Okay.
There is a new game called Tipperary, which I don't know what it's about, but it reminds me of that song, As Long as Tipperary. and then we got Pokemon My First Battle. Which is basically starters for Pokemon yeah. for all ages.
Oh, I hadn't seen yeah. that. That's very handy.
All right, let's talk about comics. This is a fantastic first week of comics of the week for the month.
I agree.
I easily could put together a top 10 out of just this week, and did. but
I understand that lists are your thing. Yeah.
Let's start with the book that we've all been anticipating since Void Rivals number 1 came out.
Choo 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 choo.
Transformers number 1. This is by Daniel Warren Johnson.
You might remember from Murder Falcon?
Murder Falcon, and Dual Powerbomb,
and Wonder Woman
Dead Earth.
He's kind
and,
of like...
Beta Ray Bill.
And Beta Ray Bill.
Oh, yeah. His properties he's previously done have been a little bit kind of like, I guess I'd say metal properties,
yeah.
right? Kind of like high-energy, kind of metalhead sort of
For
stuff.
For sure.
And this is like, Transformers are as metalhead as you can get. That's literally what they're made of.
Yes.
There's some nuance at work here that is it is both a recreation and a rethink of the classic Transformers story of where they crash the Ark onto the on Earth and they meet up with the Witwickies and stuff
yep,
like that.
Yep.
But there's sort of a let's see. So in this, I haven't had a chance to reread it actually since we got it back.
I've read it three.
I read a preview. I read a preview a couple months ago.
Oh, you did not read it today?
Nah, I didn't have a chance. What is Spike is dealing with? Is it financial issues?
No. Spike,
or is it dad?
Spark Plug is dealing with the loss of a son.
Yes. His brother died under. Do we know the circumstances? I don't think it doesn't say.
Oh, that's interesting.
We don't know. Maybe he was in the military and G.I. Joe killed him.
No, he was an astronaut. He blew up in a
Challenger type thing?
Yeah, in a Challenger kind of explosion.
Okay. Do we think there's probably going to be some more...
It could be.
But so is his name actually Sparkplug?
Spike.
Spark. His dad. Spike is the little one. Sparkplug is the big
but
one.
But mostly we're seeing Spike in this, right?
His dad is like
his dad's
referenced
his dad is like drinking at the bar and working in the factory and kind of... not being a great dad to his teenage son Spike.
Right.
Spike has a hipster girlfriend who draws art and does badass heavy metal art on her van.
Yep.
And the two of them stumble upon the Ark.
Yeah.
And full of what looks like dead Transformers.
Yeah, and that part.
And we probably shouldn't say much beyond that.
Right, that part is the part that seems familiar, and then, like, kind of, as soon as things start happening, things start getting kind of different.
Yeah.
And I can already see elements of where it's going. It's a bit edgier.
Yeah.
A little bit than the Transformers you're used to, but if you remember the Transformers movie. When there was a little bit of carnage happened, then you'll be like, oh, that is within the original G1 Transformers style.
There are a couple big shocks that happen in this.
Yes. Yep.
It is super awesomely drawn by Johnson himself.
Yeah, the art's fantastic.
There's some specifically amazing pages in it. It is the best Transformers comic I've read.
I agree.
Because honestly,
I think this is the best Transformers comic I've read.
I have nostalgia for the Marvel stuff. It laid so much of the groundwork and all that. And I've enjoyed bits and pieces of other stuff since. But this combination, like, I almost thought that, like, the previous IDW stuff was almost, like, it was almost overthinking. It was almost, like, trying to make hard sci-fi or at least more serious sci-fi out of stuff.
It was for the Transformers hardcore. I think that was the thing you and I both determined. It's like, it's for people, like, who are really into Transformers.
Right, and we're ready for something different. And I can respect it.
Sure, but I think you and I, Dave, are maybe casual Transformers fans at best.
And sometimes you need to rewind to the concept, Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons.
Optimus Prime is awesome in this. The leader of the Decepticons is pretty great in this.
Yep.
It is a fantastic first issue.
Yeah. There's also neat stuff going on in the sort of companion book Void Rivals, if you've been following that.
Yep.
It's the kind of slow burn lead up to it, the sort of sci-fi universe world building one. Transformers, they kind of knocked it out of the park in that first issue.
Yeah,
so.
It's a great first issue.
If you have any interest at all, I'd say go ahead and try it. And they have a bunch of different covers. So.
Yeah, there's some great covers.
So if you have a hankering to, there's like a good Autobots one, there's a good Decepticons one, and several varieties of in between.
Yep.
What else we got?
The other big launch this week is Marvel's Gods. That's, it is an acronym, right?
Yeah, they have a little period after everything, but I guess we don't know yet what it means. But this is Jonathan Hickman writing and
Valerio Schiti on art.
Yeah, and Hickman's last major project for Marvel that you'll probably remember is, well, he's currently doing the Ultimates kind of relaunch, but prior to that he did House of X and Powers of X, or Powers of Ten.
Hickman has kind of made a career out of reinventing, even going back to his Fantastic Four, of like taking things and doing a big, he's a world builder.
Right.
He is.
And this is him doing his world building with a set of his own original characters in the Marvel Universe. We don't get a lot of that these days. A lot of writers have soured on creating new characters for they'd rather do that in their creator-owned books.
Right.
So for him to create a handful of new immortals, basically.
I wonder if he's got a little bit of a sweetheart deal that's not quite conventional.
Maybe so. But I think the biggest Marvel character in this is Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
There's some other big ones that...
Yeah, but Doctor Strange is the main, main other player.
Yeah.
But yeah, it mainly focuses on one character who's like the avatar for basically their Lords of Order.
Yeah.
Kind of the powers that be. That's not akin to like what Angel had in his television show or something like that.
But he is like a magician, right? He's got sort of magic powers.
He's kind of like a little bit.
You mentioned Dr. Fate.
A little bit of Dr. Fate, a little bit of Doctor Who, because he doesn't outright have like mystical abilities. He just has the know-how. Of, like, maneuvering through all the, like, sort of the mystical worlds, and
that's also a little bit John... I mean, I don't know if it's like this, because I haven't read it, but is that a little like John Constantine?
A little bit of that.
He doesn't go pew-pew with his magic. He tricks
people. He does a little more now.
Yeah, he does a little bit more now, but mostly he'd be more likely to, like, create a summoning circle or something.
But I feel like the character is pretty cool. You're introduced to his wife, and they have sort of an adversarial relationship.
Yep.
Because of work circumstances, and then there happens to be an end of the world kind of scenario that he gets in, kind of tied up in.
Yep.
They call it a Babylon event, which I thought was kind of a fun idea. Yep. And a bunch of Marvel players are there, and...
Oh, the other thing I liked is that he starts going to the various Elders of the Universe.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun to see those guys again.
Hickman gets to play in the Marvel Universe pretty well here, and I think he utilizes some kind of underutilized things.
Yeah.
So I was happy to see a lot of that show
It's a
up.
Fun first issue. If you like Hickman stuff, if you liked House of X, you're going to want to check this one
out. Except for I think this has a little bit more upbeatness than his X-Men stuff.
DC has another one of their specials called DC's Ghouls Just Want to Have Fun. That is their Halloween special.
Yep.
It's one of these big square-bound thing. Stories featuring the Montoya, The Question, Green Lantern, Animal Man, Nightwing, Superman, Robot Man, Crushin' Lobo, and Man-Bat. Bunch of different writers. A lot of great artists in here. Javier Rodriguez, Riley Rossmo, Tyler Crook. There's some pretty fantastic artwork in this.
Yeah. Get it for the Halloween lover in your life.
Yeah. Speaking of the Halloween lover in your life, there is also Star Trek Halloween. That's like, H-O-L-O.
Like holodeck.
Like holodeck.
Oh, I meant to watch. I meant to read this and I missed
this
it.
This is a four-issue weekly miniseries. Has art by Joe Eisma. You may remember from Morning Glories, a few other things, Howard the Duck.
He's a good artist.
So this is a set. It's set on the Enterprise. It is a Next Generation crew, and an old,
like back in the day, like 80s era Next Generation.
Yeah, crew. Yeah. An old enemy of the Star Trek that anybody from the original series will recognize shows up and starts causing holographic fear things. It is very much a, if they were to do a Star Trek Halloween special, like a show.
Yeah.
This is what it would be.
Ah, nice. It's a lot of fun.
And it's got, like Guinan's in it. It's got a lot of little references. Barclay's in it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, especially after season 3 of Picard's show, which reunited the whole crew, I've got... it reminded me of how much I like that crew.
Yeah. This was super fun. I've been really enjoying the Star Trek books over at IDW, and this was a fun a little treat. I also... Star Trek Defiant comes out this week and is a new status quo after their Day of Blood crossover. And I really like that status quo. If you've not been reading those books, I think the first Star Trek is out in hardcover.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth a read.
Yeah. It's the series the only time that a Star Trek book has ever been nominated for an Eisner Award.
Was it really?
Yeah. I forget. I think it was one of the short stories in like an anthology, or maybe the anthology itself was. But that's pretty huge. Star Trek comic, licensed comics in general, do not. And yet, here we are in like an era when there's a really good Transformers comic, there's a really good Star Trek comic.
Several, actually.
And honestly, like they're doing good stuff with the Star Wars books and several of the others, even the Alien stuff. I'm not keeping close watch on it, but it seems like they're doing good.
Yeah, licensed stuff is definitely on the rise right now.
Nick told me about some Aliens book where it's like the Xenomorphs, like face hug, like a bug from Starship Troopers. And
yeah, it's the Alien Annual this week. Yeah. It's kind of a silent issue that features the Xenomorphs going up against another alien race.
Aliens versus Aliens.
It was a really interesting concept, written by Declan Shelby.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got some big number 2 issues from DC this week. Fire and Ice, Welcome to Smallville, which is doing, without saying too much, they're doing sort of a reality show riff. In there, where they're deciding to bring in a number of E-list heroes and villains, including from JL Europe, Beefeater.
I remember him.
Gentleman Ghost.
Yep.
Maxi Zeus.
Oh, yeah.
And then some invented ones like Grodd's sister, Linka, a guy named Smarty Pants who has two extra brains, which gives him extreme intelligence, but also extreme anxiety, depression, and heartache. And then the King of Cats, who his abilities are, he believes he can control an army of cats. There's also Lot's wife, who can turn any object into salt.
That's wild.
So all these little E-list characters wind up in Smallville, and it turns into sort of a reality show thing.
It seems like a true spiritual heir to Justice League International.
It is, and it's fun. It's goofy, but it's fun. I'm kind of digging it. And then there's Blue Beetle number 2, which was a solid entry.
Yep.
And then Birds of Prey number 2, which I know we all really like number 1, and then enjoyed number 2 as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
The
art is gorgeous. Insane.
They're planning a cool kind of heisty mission. Yep. Harley Quinn's like, I got transportation covered, because it's a real...
Harley Quinn's buddy was such a great reveal.
They have to get to a tough-to-get-to place, and Harley's like, I can do this, and they're like, okay.
What I love is when the reveal is like, they're like, oh, I'm pretty sure I can do this.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff. It's a cool team.
And also, there's some good stuff in here. Like, they're having to raid Themyscira to get Black Canary's sister. And Barda is like, I think it's Zealot is like...
Wisely says...
Like, why don't we just ask Wonder Woman? And I thought the answer for why made a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's actually a reasonable plot point to explain away the why they have to sneak in and why they can't just ask their buddy.
Yeah. It was well done. I was like, that's smart.
Yep.
Yeah, some solid, solid little writing and really, really nice art. The latest chapter of Gotham War, Part 4, is in Batman, where we get some new reveals about Ra's al Ghul and Vandal Savage.
You said you were pretty happy with some new wrinkles they added
really,
to.
I really liked
to Vandal Savage's history.
And there's also a throwdown between Nightwing and Batman and Robin's. That is pretty brutal and interesting, and is all about sort of the what, you know, what the philosophy of their philosophy of crime fighting is, and I'm really curious to see where they're going with this whole Batman of Zur-En-Aa thing.
I think that we may have kind of figured out what they might be doing with it, and if they're doing what we're kind of hoping they're doing, it's a good thing.
Yes.
So we'll be keeping up on that and reporting back. But yeah, this continues to be a good series.
We've got the conclusion of Peacemaker Tries Hard.
Yep.
Which is a delight and has the best caption of the year in it.
Yes. Slightly profane.
Yes.
But very, very hilarious, and which has been... You know, this is a Black Label miniseries, and obviously pretty much completely inspired by the TV show. So if you're a fan of that, just to reiterate once again, this legitimately captures kind of what made that good.
At the same time, it is not just a ripoff. It is set in the DC universe and uses
It's mainly him solo, so the backup team from the show is not there.
Yeah.
That particular dynamic is not in it, but he does work alongside some people, some heroes, some villains, some who knows what they are.
A pug dog. I finally got on board the Enfield Gang Massacre that y'all have been talking about, the Western series from Image.
Yeah, based on a true story and from the writer and artist team who did That Texas Blood, which has, you know, been kind of a little mini hit for us.
And number one comes back in this week, so we have 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
And I believe all management recommended at this point. We all really like this one.
Yeah, it's just a good story told really well. The art, I think, is exceptional.
Yeah, it really is. I really am still really digging Warren North's Fantastic Four. This week has a new story arc starting, and it's pretty wild.
There's some crazy stuff in there.
And then Jed McKay's Doctor Strange, which continues the story of the General Strange, the like 5,000-year-old alternate Doctor Strange who fought a war for the Vishanti, is now kind of a monster.
Jed McKay, Tuesday.
We got Lore Olympus Volume 5, for those of you keeping up with that popular webcomic.
Yep.
In softcover and hardcover. We got a new novel called Bishop Takes King that is features Kate Spencer, or Kate Bishop, Hawkeye. We've got Jeff Lemire's newest book, Phantom Road.
This was one we talked about as it was coming out in single issues, but it's kind of a supernatural thing involving a trucker and a woman he picks up, and the weird kind of otherworldly places that they go to, this like... almost like a mirrored version of our own world, but still desolate, but there's with weird zombie creatures, and it's just another one of those, like, I like Lemire's mysteries, but I also like the incidental moments, characters just talking about things, trying to figure out what's going on. It's good stuff. I recommend it if you are looking for something not like scary, but on that supernatural eerie edge.
It's good for spooky season.
It's good for spooky season.
We got a comic called Glass Scientists, which is a seems like sort of a steampunky. It's Dr. Henry Jekyll, who is trying to fix the public image of mad scientists. So it's like a YA Jekyll.
Yeah, Jekyll.
And apparently, Frankenstein and after Frankenstein, the angry mobs have gotten good at hunting down monsters and wiping out scientists. So he's trying to do a PR makeover for mad scientists.
I know Serena was checking this out earlier and was liking its vibe, and she was planning to read the whole thing.
It looks fun. It's got really nice artwork. Tim Seeley's Local Man. Tim Seeley and Tony Fleek's Local Man, which I know Nick and I have been reading. I don't know if you're still caught up. I'm behind a little bit. This is basically a guy who is a young, very much a Youngblood type superhero.
Yeah, it calls back the extreme 90s comics, but he was like kind of a washout.
Yes, and he goes back to his mom and dad's basement in the Midwest, and then murders start happening, and he has to figure out what's going on. But he's not supposed to act as a superhero anymore.
It's what I read of it was a pretty good balance of kind of like character work and kind of a stripe of 90s nostalgia, or a slightly more realistic view of what it would have been like to be on the like sort of big publicity team that was supposed to be Youngblood.
Yeah. Jed McKay's Doctor Strange gets its first collection here. It's the first five issues. I've been really, really digging this run.
Nice.
And I definitely recommend it. Clementine Book 2, which is the set in the world of Walking Dead.
It's from that Telltale Games.
Yes, Clementine was the lead in that. This is Tilly Walden, who did On a Sunbeam, the Eisner-winning graphic novel.
So this I read some of the previous Clementine graphic novel, and it was really good.
Yeah, I don't think I read all of it, but I read a bunch of it. And yeah, so I'm kind of curious to check out the next part of that. Hope Larson, who you may know from...
Wrinkle in Time adaptation that... Right. It was sold huge for us. Like, we couldn't keep it in stock.
Yeah, Salt Magic was one of the other ones. She's done a few graphic novels. This is her newest one called Be That Way that is told through a series of journal entries from, like, teenage to 20-something. And it's sort of a slice of life about a girl who gets a job at a video store and starts to sort of figure out who she is. It's a pre-internet, so it's all, like, told through journals. There's a book from Douglas Wolk, who is a comics academic. And I believe maybe worked as an editor at some point, but this is called All of the Marvels, and it is a story about sort of Marvel comics told through like notable issues. It's got little essays about various issues that they've done.
As I recall, Randy, they're kind of like micro essays, not even like multiple pages long,
right?
Just like a couple paragraphs or whatever. And like if you can look back at Marvel and remember, oh, I loved this particular issue, or oh, I remember this famous story, this looks like a very readable kind of book in that format. I'm thinking seriously about picking it up.
And if you don't know this, it's actually a really good intro to sort of some of the names of comics. Like, you're gonna find out who I see there's a section on Jonathan Hickman's New Avengers, but also like Chris Claremont, going back to Doug mentioned Paul Galassi. So it's like, it's a lot of different names, and he will sort of talk about who they are, why they're important, what they did, that kind of thing. It looks fun. It doesn't look dry like you would expect an academic book to be. It looks like a fun read.
Right, right. I agree.
DC has a few YA books this week, including the second volume of Vixen NYC, and the first is Zatanna and the Ripper. But the one I want to pick out with Dimension was Cena Grace, the writer and artist who did Iceman and Ghosted in L.A., is telling a story of Clark Kent in Smallville in sort of early days. And it seems to be maybe some kind of threat that is, he can't hit with his powers. And I'm wondering if it's like a friend who commits suicide or something like that. But it seems like almost sort of a slice of life, Superman growing into being, you know...
They do really well with that in those books. That, you know, they lends powers through, you know, kind of real teen, you know, like realistic teen emotional beats.
And last and possibly least, because it's weird, James Tynion is someone we all really enjoy.
Yeah. Yep.
Some of his early work is getting collected by DC. They collected his Talon miniseries. This is Ghostmaker / Clown Hunter by James Tynion IV. And Ghostmaker is his, like, what if Batman were even more rich and a killer? And Clown Hunter is what if a kid's family was killed by Joker's gang, and he decided to put on a costume, get a baseball bat, and kill all the clowns he can find. All the evil clowns, I should say. He's not just going to the circus beating them to death.
It's a solid plan.
I've read a couple of these things, and they are surprisingly good characters. Like, they've got good visual designs.
Yeah.
This annual that has the origin of his, actually has art by James Stocco.
Wow.
That's the origin of Clown Hunter is in there. It has a lot of really... they've got good looks. It's weird. It's undeniably weird. But if you like Tynion's stuff, I would definitely recommend checking this out.
Yeah.
Anything else? Did I miss everything?
I think
that's it.
All right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about a whole bunch of trailers. Okay, we are going to run down like a dozen trailers.
Yeah, there's a lot.
There's a lot of stuff coming out. Some of it looks good, some of it not so much. Some of it hard to tell. It's a mix of TV and movies. I'm just going to run down in the random order that I wrote it down in.
Okay.
Let's start with Silent Night, which I think is one of the not so good ones.
Yeah, I feel like this might be at the bottom of my list.
Yeah, this is John Woo, legendary action director who has not made a good movie in at least a decade.
When was his last movie? Do we know?
I don't know.
I think you want to look it up on the phone trash this thing.
So here's my experience with John Woo was I'd heard he was this legendary director, done The Killer, all these Hong Kong action movies. Never saw any of them.
Yeah.
And then I saw he did Hard Target, which I did not see.
Right, not good.
And then he did Face Off, or did he do Replacement Killers first?
I did Replacement Killers first.
So the first thing I think I saw him was Replacement Killers, and I'm like, oh no, this is the great big hype?
Yeah.
And it turns out that what worked for him in Hong Kong did not so much work in America.
Well, the weird thing is, if you should still see his Hong Kong stuff because it's not like the American stuff.
Yeah.
There's actually like very little slow-mo in it. It's got a like it's like all real-time, super kinetic, more violent, and all around better, I'd say.
But like his US output was like Hard Target, then Replacement Killers, Mission Impossible 2, and Face Off. Right?
Yeah. I would Broken say Arrow? The best
Broken
of those...
He did Broken Arrow.
I feel like Broken Arrow and Face Off are the best of his kind of big budgety type ones.
But neither of them are good movies.
But he also like made, like, I don't know, like Wind Talkers in there somewhere.
He did. And right. M.I. 2.
What is it?
Mission Impossible 2.
I mentioned Mission Impossible. That's the worst Mission Impossible by a mile.
It's not good.
Yeah.
So the last thing he did was in 2017, a movie called Manhunt, which is, I think, in Japan. Like a... Yeah, it's
so we know what this movie is about.
So Silent Night, it takes place at Christmas, or seems to. Joel Kinnaman is the lead. Basically, he is a dad. It looks like a gang shooting happens in his front yard, and he gets badly injured, and his son gets killed.
Right. Which, by the way, that was part of the opening premise of Face Off. Is right, didn't he? And he lost
his kid gets killed, but it's by his nemesis.
It's by his nemesis. I'm just saying
it's not
that
a random shooting.
He gets shot through him, and his kid's killed,
right.
Which definitely is reflected here. Mm-hmm. I think in the same fashion, mm-hmm. but he also like loses his voice in the trailer.
Oh, is that
he gets shot in the throat?
Oh, I didn't
and he
quite
can't
catch
talk.
That.
And as a result, there is no dialogue.
And there's no dialogue.
Will
so
other people be talking, but not him?
I think it's just an hour and a half of silence and violence.
The trailer looks basically looks like The Punisher. The guy trains. He goes and kills all these people who are involved.
Punisher or Taken or name your various revenge movies.
It looks like it looks like a really solid 1993 action movie.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it is coming out in 2024.
If that is your bag, however, maybe. I don't know.
But like, we're all action movie people. We all like action movies.
Very much so.
You know, I rewatched The Professional the other day, and The Professional is like fantastic throughout. That is like Leon the Professional.
Yeah.
And like, it earned its stripes. This looks super derivative.
But that's because it has something else to say other than just action and mayhem.
Right. This
there's
like
there's subtext.
Just action and mayhem. It was, I believe, a Red Band trailer, so they got to the blood flows freely.
I think somebody thought it was clever if it was like using Christmas music and quiet, and that's not enough of a gimmick.
He does always have those kind of weird hooks and stuff like that, where there's like a simple, almost like operatic, larger than life premise, and then he kind of rolls with it. Anyway, it would be hard to imagine me going to see this other than at gunpoint.
No.
Even if it got great reviews somehow.
Yeah, I don't see myself seeing
and
this.
Some people
either.
Were like, John Woo is back. After 40 years, John Woo is back.
We watched the trailer for Quiz Lady, which is a Hulu original movie. Movie, right? Not TV show?
Yeah, it's a movie.
It's the Awkwafina one.
Awkwafina and Sandra Oh play sisters. Their mom disappears from the nursing home, and it turns out she owes like $80,000 to the mob.
$86,000 to the mob.
So the mob kidnaps the Awkwafina's cat.
Dog. It's
dog.
A pug.
Dog, yes. And they're like, you need to get the money back. And it turns out she's really good at quiz shows, so she's going to go on like a Jeopardy-style show.
But she's good at like playing them from like her couch and just shouting out the answers, and seems like she's like super anxious in like with the idea of doing it in any sort of in reality.
Yep.
So this seems like it's a, sisters road trip
comedy.
With kind of weirdly high stakes about like saving the mom, but it's very much comedic.
Technically, it's all about saving the dog, because the mom has disappeared.
Oh, the mom's just disappeared. She's just in hiding or something.
It vaguely reminds me of someone I liked about Joyride.
Yeah.
Which I did love Joyride.
Joyride's
great. So this looks like a fun hijinks movie. I really like Sandra Oh. I really like Awkwafina.
Yeah. I think this is where
the potential here.
The people in it outshine the story, which looks a little silly. Mm-hmm. Also, the guest performance by Jason Schwartzman and Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell is playing the Jeopardy-esque.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty funny. It's very meta.
It's very meta.
But this actually had a fair number of funny moments in the trailer.
Yeah.
So it looks like a maybe.
Didn't Will Ferrell play...
He played Alex Trebek.
That's what I thought. Trebek. Okay.
Yeah, he played Trebek.
Yeah. Your mother, Trebek.
That's what I thought, that he was in those sketches. Yes. Yeah.
He's persistently just like bitterly cynical. Yeah. Attitude about how stupid the celebrities were was always a highlight.
Yes. And someone played Burt Reynolds as Turd Ferguson, or did Burt Reynolds play Turd Ferguson?
That was Norm MacDonald.
That was Norm MacDonald, yeah.
Doing the most spot-on Burt Reynolds ever. Yep. More spot-on than Burt Reynolds.
The Jeopardy skits were always some of my favorites.
Some of their best, yeah. Anyway, solid trailer.
I will press play.
I'll probably watch that one. We got the trailer for Scavenger Rain, which is an Anime Max original.
Yeah.
Coming in a couple weeks here, I think.
I think so. I knew nothing of it. I was looking for trailers the other day, and I saw this pop up, and I was like, I was weirdly enamored with its kind of beauty and kind of bizarreness.
It is beautiful and weird. Dave correctly pinned it as sort of very, very Mobius-like.
Yeah, if you know the French comic artist Mobius, like Airtight Garage or anything else he's done, it has that surrealness of this alien world, which it seems like there's a loose plot about
a ship crashing.
Are they like a family? Is it a group of prisoners?
I think it's just
prisoners?
a group of people who have to survive on an unknown planet.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of Robin Crusoe.
There's a survivalist element, and the creatures on this planet, and then like it's sort of like its physics and stuff are weird. It's really, I have to say, it is one of the most beautiful bits, some of the most beautiful animation I've seen recently, at least. At a glance, it looks pretty amazing. Say the name of it again.
Scavenger's Rain?
Scavenger's Rain. Is that like R-E-I-G-N?
R-E-I-G-N, yes.
Okay. It's worth checking out the trailer, I think, just to see how amazing it looks.
So the only person in here that I know who does a voice, which I guess is the lead, is Ali Shawkat from Arrested Development. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah. No, for sure. It's
right. Maybe. It reminded us, Randy, a little bit of a graphic novel or a comic series from a few years ago, or like 10 years ago now, probably. What was it called? The Survivalist
Planetoid sci-fi? From Image.
Yeah,
it's probably been out of print for 10 years.
Yeah, but Planetoid was a really cool little story that kind of got a little bit into the nuts and bolts of how people survived on sort of like an abandoned prison colony on this harsh alien world. Mm-hmm. And this had elements that reminded me of it. But anyway, yeah, go check out the visuals, see if it grabbed you.
We got a Netflix original called Leave the World Behind, which is based on a novel. It's got Mahershala Ali, Julia Roberts, Ethan Hawke.
Kevin Bacon.
Oh, that was Kevin Bacon. Mm-hmm. I thought I was mistaken for Ethan Hawke.
No, they're both in there.
Okay. It is a... It looks like basically there's going to, like, something happens that's going to, like, end civilization. Like, cyber attacks or something like that.
But it's, like this massive, like, worldwide cyber attacks.
Yeah. Well,
and we were trying to, like, is that caused by terrorists? Is that caused by aliens? We're not quite sure from the trailer.
Right.
The
mood is good. That's a great cast.
Yeah.
And it's by Sam Esmail, who did Mr. Robot.
Yep.
Who did similar things in Mr. Robot. I am definitely curious. I thought it was a very good sort of effective trailer.
Yeah, but it's also one of those that doesn't tell you too much, which quite possibly could be good about it. But
I'm on board.
Yeah, it looked interesting.
It really reminded me of the M. Night Shyamalan, the Cabin in the Wood, or...
Yeah,
Knock at the Cabin, which is kind of like this ending thing, but without the hullabaloo. Just kind of that impending doom feeling.
Yeah, I get that comparison.
With those actors of that caliber, that could very well come off.
Yeah.
Speaking of, we didn't get a lot of info on this. The Curse.
Is that the trippy one?
Yeah, this is from the A24 Showtime.
Nathan Fielder,
yes.
Who did Nathan for You and a few other things, sort of weird sketch, weird uncomfortable sketch comedy stuff.
Which is like my least favorite thing in the world.
I can't stand it. And then one of the Safdie brothers, who also does weird, uncomfortable, tense stuff, although I like that.
Right, Uncut Gems, and what's their other big one? I haven't seen it yet.
Good Time.
I'm
trying to see that one, too.
It was good.
And
it was a good time.
This trailer shows... is this the one that shows two people?
There are two people, yeah, doing like just like a
filming
a local news spot, basically.
Right, it feels like it'd be like a little bumper for a news spot or something like that.
Yep. And it's Emma Stone. And is it Nathan Fielder?
It is Nathan Fielder.
Something weird where she's talking
And it might actually be Safdie. It looked like Safdie.
Oh. Some factoid about it, like, did you know that, you know, the sun can actually be used to put out fires?
Yeah.
It's real scripted banter where he's like, really? Wow. And then they do another take of it, and that's the end of the trailer, and but there's some, like, weird vibes and other little, I don't know if there's snippets of other stuff.
So,
but
no.
It is a genre-bending comedy series that explores how an alleged curse is the relationship of a newly married couple as they try to conceive a child while co-starring on their new HGTV show.
Oh, wow. What the hell?
That is a bizarre concept.
That is a weird bitch.
That was them doing a bit on their HGTV show.
Yeah.
Okay. But I like Emma Stone. She's very good at choosing interesting projects.
Sure. Corbin Burns is in an episode.
Okay.
I am skeptical as hell of this, but I will definitely at least check out an episode to see where it goes.
Yeah, I will too.
Disney had a new trailer called Wish. It is from, I think, some of the people who made Frozen.
It is.
And
I saw Moana promoted in there too. They're like,
they said the company that produced, like, Disney made Moana.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It actually says it is like the people.
So that's their basically saying, remember that movie you liked?
Remember the movie you liked? We made that.
What if that?
I don't know if this looks amazing, but I definitely felt kind of like good Disney vibes.
It is a fantasy setting of sorts,
yep.
Right?
Yes.
And the king, it seems, has some kind of power to when people to they will send him wishes.
Mm-hmm.
They give them their wishes, and he grants the ones he wants to grant.
Right. But I believe that the PR sort of it is that he like grants all wishes, of them or whatever. And when in reality he's manipulating stuff a lot more, I'll be curious to see exactly what this is sort of a metaphor for. That actually sounds like it could be an interesting critique of power.
Holding on to power, yeah, I can actually see that, yeah.
But like is the woman in it his daughter?
No, she's just like a subject who becomes his assistant.
Okay, becomes his assistant. She had the kind of quirky girl vibes of a lot of Disney heroines.
Yeah,
everyone from Ariel up to lead in. Encanto, yeah.
So the lead is Ariana DeBose, who was in West Side Story.
Oh, okay.
The other leads are Chris Pine, Alan Tudyk, Evan Peters.
That was Chris Pine. Seems to be the at least somewhat villainous king, although exactly how sympathetic they're going to portray him is a little hard to tell from the trailer. He seems kind of villainous.
He does.
The particular manic nervous energy, the, I'm so nervous and I'm always stumbling over my words kind of character is, I've just seen it too much.
I quite like this trailer, but I also...
Yeah.
The producers worked on Frozen, Frozen 2, and Wreck-It Ralph.
That's a good pedigree.
What's the other? It's a writing team. Allison Moore and Allison Moore worked on. Wow, looks like a lot of like TV stuff, like Manhunt, God Friended Me, like just all like
interesting.
Yeah, not what you would think. Not Disney.
Not
stuff.
Your typical Disney.
But it's
fare.
Like someone from Frozen, along with someone not typical Disney fare. I'll be curious to see how it goes. I mean, I haven't even watched Elemental yet, so
I quite liked Elemental.
I will say that to the. Sort of an analysis of power looked a little bit more interesting to me than Elemental, although...
Elemental's getting good reviews.
Is it? What's Elemental's thematics about? Is
it's
this about...
It's racial division and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
a little bit, but mixed with a rom-com.
Yeah. Sure.
Anyway, I think probably my favorite thing I saw was the True Detective Night Country trailer.
This looks really tense.
So you've never seen any Night True Detective?
No.
So the first season I thought was phenomenal. The second season was disappointing with high points. I don't think I ever watched the third one.
Each one is separate and different.
Each one is a
right?
completely different story. There's no tie-in at all. It's basically
I thought there
story.
Was like overarching
nope.
weirdness.
No.
Okay.
I mean, there is some weirdness in some of them, but no, the first one was about sort of a it had vibes maybe Cthulhu-esque, but it wasn't. Because
there was like a King in Yellow kind
yeah, but
of reference.
It actually wasn't.
Oh,
it was
really?
Like,
okay.
But the second one was just like about the water in like water rights in LA and
yeah,
a casino boss and stuff. Like it is the True Detective is basically about a pair of detectives. That is the pitch.
Okay.
And it's always by a crime writer named Nick Pizzolatto.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one also had a really spectacular director on it, and they've gotten different directors as they go on.
Who was the director of it? Because that was like...
I've forgotten his name. But he's great.
Kasim, no.
No.
So I think the big draw here is the lead is Jodie Foster. Yeah. And I don't know the other lady.
I actually don't know her either.
But are they're kind of like, are they both slightly older detectives then?
I think the other person is younger.
Okay. But it seems like they have old beef, right?
Well, that's the other thing True Detective has done throughout is it always brings in people who are like, wow, that guy's doing TV.
So
past stars have been like Vince Vaughn,
Matthew McConaughey,
and
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell. Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson, some of the two initial leads. Mahershala Ali, Rachel McAdams. Like they've had a ton of big names on them.
So just plot wise, this is about some sort of weird grisly murder in Alaska.
Yep.
It's got at a glance, it has elements of Fargo, because you'll just see people in big coats and snow and stuff.
Yep.
But it's definitely an eerie vibe. It has these sort of like, it could be during one of those minimal sunlight periods.
Yep.
And there seems to be this like chunk of ice that has a bunch of like five bodies in it that are kind of like fused together by the ice or something.
Yeah.
It sounded grisly and kind of interesting, a little David Fincher weird kind of serial killer movie. But there were vague enough in it about what's going on that I'm like, is this a serial killer? Is it a cult? Is it, who knows what it is?
There's, like, weird symbols left.
There is. But I do wonder, to some degree, if, like, those could be red herrings
That's usually his vibe. He usually does the red herrings for,
sort of supernatural-y stuff.
Yeah.
That's like all the old, the Hardy Boys and Three Investigators books. They always thought it was a ghost, but it just turned out to be water rights people.
Yeah.
So the other woman is Callie Rice, who apparently is a professional boxer, but she's also an actress as well. She's been in a few things.
Interesting mix.
But, yeah, it's an interesting mix pairing her with Jodie Foster. That's cool. I just thought that the trailer itself was like the vibes were there.
Yeah, that's True Detective has always done that. Like their vibes just kind of one of the things they do well. I was looking to see if they had any info on the director, but it's kind of hard to find because it's like four seasons worth and it's just got everything mixed up together.
Because what is this called? It's True Detective.
It's Night Country.
Night Country.
So the first director was Cary Fukunaga.
Cary Fukunaga, right?
Who's gone on to do a bunch of different stuff. I was going to see if they have the episode thing up here. I was going to see if it's the director, but it's a gorgeous looking trailer. Issa Lopez is the director.
Oh.
I don't know the name.
No, I don't either.
Off the top of my head.
But that was a pretty strong trailer. Didn't give away too much at all. I'd be interested to see what's going on.
Yeah, it looks really good, and it's coming out in January. Less good is the Toxic Avenger trailer. I don't think any of us have any particular fondness for Toxic Avenger or trauma films or
to forgive us if we know nothing about them. But I know that they are kind of gleefully R-rated in kind of an exploitive, trashy way.
Yeah.
Peter, this one, it's like not without some anarchic fun. There's a couple of reporters who are reporting on random... It's the vibe is like it's very tightly edited, but with like lots of fast jump cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they're talking about the return of the Toxic Avenger. People are giving reports from around town on it.
Yeah.
And then like some weird gang, what do they call them? The something lads?
The Nasty Lads.
Take over, I missed the
fast food place.
Yeah, it's a fast food place. And you only see him silhouetted, but it's Peter Dinklage as the new Toxic Avenger.
And he starts tearing gang apart.
He's a weird guy who's mutated by, I guess, toxic waste.
Yeah.
And I think he's got a mop, usually, and he smacked a guy and knocks his jaw off.
Yeah.
It is kind of comically gory.
Yeah.
Not really gory, but comically gory.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen Dead Alive by Peter Jackson or stuff like that, I feel like I assume it's going to be somewhat in that style.
I have friends who are very excited about this. I could not be less interested.
You guys have fun with that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I am excited to see the Doctor Who 60th anniversary trailer. This is going to be the bridging the previous Doctor.
Is this a movie?
This is a movie.
Because the last episode, the Doctor, Jodie Whittaker, transformed into David Tennant.
That's never happened, right? Doctor's never regenerated back.
And we know that is not who plays him in the next season. So this is an adventure that will happen while David Tennant somehow is back.
But it's an adventure on, like, big budget scale.
Yeah.
Right. Randy, I think, correctly noted that it felt like a kind of big kind of Hollywood action movie.
Style.
Presumably still with the sort of morality and sort of style.
Yeah,
and the,
yeah, but, like, UNIT is involved, so they've got, like, the military stuff.
And there were big moments where the Doctor was like, I don't know if I can save you this time, and...
Well, the big thing, I don't know if you... Nick, you know the Donna era a little bit, mm-hmm. right? So, Dave,
I've seen a bit of it. I like her a lot as a companion.
Do you know where she left off?
I can't remember.
Because that's kind of what's important, is that basically where it left off is he had to erase all his memories of her because some enemy had trapped... Basically, it would melt her brain or something.
Like a meme virus.
Basically, to save her,
she can't remember the Doctor, because if she does, she will die.
Yeah. Right.
And so somehow they're going to get around that.
Right. Probably because they realized those two characters had good chemistry. What I remember about Donna was that she would kind of not put up with the Doctor's kind of like, I'm running the show kind of way. She would kind of shut him down when he got full of himself.
And she was also one of the few companions who was not in love with the Doctor.
That's true.
They were just friends.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I remember the Doctor's calling her his best friend.
Yeah. And so I really like that pairing together. They look great in this.
Yeah.
And
Neil Patrick Harris plays what looks like a crazy German bad guy.
Yeah, you said this guy was an existing bad guy?
It does not seem to be. I think he was. But apparently he is called the Toymaker.
Okay.
Okay.
It looks like a ton of fun. And then they did at the end show in Kutagawa as the Doctor.
So I take that back. Toymaker, an all-powerful enemy last seen on the series back in 1966.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's fun. They're bringing back, like, a super retro one.
Okay.
You know what's
been
cool?
What, Tom Baker's?
I have not watched Doctor Who in, like, 10 years or something.
No, I haven't
either. But I could watch a two-hour movie and sort of get my feet wet and see, do I want to jump in on the new season?
Also, this will be, has not been previously on Disney Plus, or did it already make that jump?
I think it... Just did. Because
it moved to Disney Plus. And
Because
for a while there, it was impossible to find.
Right, unless you had BBC streaming.
Yeah.
But this also will do the regeneration into...
This is going to blend in that.
Right. They straight up show it in the trailer, so in case you're wondering, wait, what happened to the new guy?
Yeah, he's at the last bit. Yeah.
He's going to show up, but we don't know what the context will be.
Because this is, the 65th? Or no, what
60th anniversary.
60th anniversary.
Yeah. I'm interested.
I'm going to watch this.
The last trailer is one that Nick and I were into. Dave, maybe not so much. It's Argyle. This is a new movie from Matthew Vaughn, who I think for you and me, Nick, can really do no wrong. Like,
the
worst thing he's done is the second Kingsman, and even that's got some fun stuff in it.
I still would very
love his movies. Kick-Ass, Kingsman, X-Men First Class.
Kingsman.
Layer Cake.
Layer Cake is the big one, yeah.
And I think of those, X-Men First Class is probably my favorite. I've never seen Kingsman. I know people like that. I like Kick-Ass okay.
I liked everything he's done.
Yeah, I have too. Yeah. I'm trying to think if there was anything else he did that...
He has adapted a couple of Mark Miller things, and that shouldn't work for me. Both.
So what he seems to be doing is something of, he does kind of... Actually, X-Men First Class accepted, maybe other stuff too, but kind of comedic action-adventure thing.
Yeah. He also did Stardust.
Oh, Stardust, right.
Oh, yeah. I really like that. But he tends to do kind of comedic gunplay action-y movies. Mm-hmm.
Everything very British.
Do they have a sly wit to them?
Yes.
Yes. He's not a Guy Ritchie, but if you... He's similar to
Guy
Ritchie.
He's
Ritchie adjacent.
He might be in his Venn diagram.
Anyway...
He might be a little more anarchic. A little crazier.
So this is about... it's about a novel... A spy novel series which stars... John Cena and Henry Cavill as the spy, the titular spies.
Correct.
Argyle. And the author is played by Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yep.
Her mom is Catherine O'Hara.
Great casting.
And she is basically on a train, looking through a book, and this weird guy is like, oh, I'm a big fan, and then spies start attacking her, and it turns out he is a spy sent to protect her. He's played by Sam Rockwell in hilarious fashion. And it turns out that her books are predicting real things that are happening in the espionage world. And so she is being hunted by Bryan Cranston, who works for some kind of spy agency.
And
somehow Samuel Jackson's involved.
Yep.
And there's a cat.
There is a cat that Sam Rockwell is not fond of.
Yeah. It looks like a big anarchic spy adventure thing. This is right up my alley. It reminds me of things I like this. I mean, Charlie's Angels, that kind of thing.
This is the... loud action film that I like.
Yeah, this is the opposite of Silent Night.
Correct.
We have bookended with action movie I don't like, action movie I like.
Yeah. This one has, it looks like it's going to have a good sense of humor and good, Matthew Vaughn knows how to do an action scene.
That
Matthew Vaughn knows how to do some bad cat CG.
The cat CG is a little rough. I will admit that, yes.
I don't care.
But the that was like one of those things like, oh, that was in the... some marketing person made them put that in the trailer.
They may well tighten that up before the final thing.
But the bit with him like popping out from the floor and in slow-mo shooting the guys was pretty cool.
I'm a sucker for the Romancing the Stone bit.
It feels like that, yes.
And it's got a little bit... Lost City did that recently with Sandra Bullock. I liked that one.
Yeah.
This one has a little bit of that.
Do we think there's going to be some kind of crazy... They seem to indicate there's a big twist or something like that.
That somehow maybe she is creating this
right. Is this... Yeah, I'm like, well, what is the big high concept that will go into the way her books are predicting the future?
I don't know, but I'm curious.
I am curious about that part.
The spy.
And this y'all should just blab that to me later.
This is an Apple film, right? So it's going to be on Apple Plus?
I believe so.
So that's nice. Yeah. Cool. So I don't have to pay to see it.
Correct.
All right. That wraps our trailers for the week. We're gonna take a break and then come back, talk briefly about the One Piece finale, and then possibly a couple horror movies. All right, we talked a little bit about One Piece, and I think when we did, I had not seen any of it, or I'd seen half of it.
Maybe you'd seen, I think, like a couple episodes.
So now we have all seen all of One Piece. We're not talking the anime. No one's seen all the anime. That's a lot. You can tell me somebody's seen all of One Piece. I don't believe you. No one's read every page. Even the people making it, they have not read every page of One Piece.
There's whole volumes
they haven't read.
I think you could have seen all of One Piece.
I don't think you could have read it.
I think there's too much.
I think you would go mad.
Yeah,
I think there's people in asylums just bouncing off the
wall. Is it possible?
You may have a close personal friend who definitely has seen it and is definitely mad.
Is she a pirate?
I don't know. Is Mandy a pirate?
Has she seen all of it?
I'm sure she has. She has. I went with her when she got... What do they call the fruits?
Devil fruits.
I went with her when she got a devil fruit tattoo.
Oh, okay.
She and all the members of her family have different devil fruit tattoos that have some meaning to them. And, like, having seen it, I can see there's an emotional bend to these stories. And
okay,
I can see how that would actually be something that I wouldn't make fun of now.
Nick, Dave's going to have a devil fruit tattoo by the end of the week.
Sure.
One on each butt cheek. we talked about this before.
Like
how
I said,
much did we talk about One Piece?
You and I had seen, I think, six like episodes.
Half.
And you had
seen, like
seen two.
Right.
So we haven't talked about a lot of this. So... What we talked about last time, what I remember specifically is I said, it's got the anime weirdness, but it's got a straightforward thing. Basically, there's a bunch of pirates, and there's devil fruits to give people powers, and that's all the buy-in.
And now
I know, they're also fish people.
They're also fish people, and...
And also weird cook restaurant things.
Right, floating culinary restaurant, like a restaurant that's like a high-end restaurant floating on like a man-made docks out in the middle of the ocean. Run by ex-pirates. It has been a great ride.
It was so much fun.
It is ridiculous how every episode has kind of taken me. I like all the villains. I like all the heroes.
Yep.
The action scenes are good. All the heartfelt moments are good.
The ending is very satisfying.
Yeah. So the last episode, which I just watched last night, I had been off on vacation and I had to pause, which was very tough to do because the next to last episode has a badass ending,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, shit, I gotta watch this.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to pause for about a week and a half and got back to it. And I was like, oh, this is almost like their Return of the King. If somehow it just ended here, I know there's more, but it has like big finale action scenes and stuff in it, at least to this arc. And so these very satisfying emotional beat denouement epilogue things that happen throughout it, where you kind of see where everybody ends up, at least at the end of this moment in time. And where that moment is the bad guy Arlong.
Yep.
Who's right. like, he's got, what do they call those? It's like
he's
shark
a sawtooth,
or whatever.
Sawtooth, swordfish or something.
Sawtooth swordfish, yeah. And his like own, like as if he, like, you know, if you haven't seen any of these, they kind of have a look of like that good Dick Tracy sort of look to a lot of these monsters and weirdos. They're these kind of shark men that are more cartoony than, say, Pirates of the Caribbean monsters.
Right.
But they look really good. And these guys have one of the leads, Nami. She did some betrayal-y stuff, and we find out some details on how they coerced that, and her kind of sad backstory, and it's really super tragic and well told. And this is a final showdown with these particular bad guys, and you know, so Arlong is a dude who Luffy, our hero, can't beat. He's too tough. Is a little bit of an anime trope kind of thing. The what level of strength, you know, are you at? Can you get higher along that level and all that? But it is kind of him going up against the big bad while Zoro. And I had to look up his name. I'm looking at the cast here. The guy who was the chef, Sanji. A super fun new addition to the character since they went to the restaurant. Basically, this whole season, Luffy has been assembling his crew of oddballs.
Yeah, we've got, like, what, 5 or 6 people all together
now? We've got five. Yeah. We'll get more.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, for sure. And, the swordsman Zoro and Sanji, the expert chef and, like, I don't know, kickboxer?
Yeah, martial artist, certainly.
Martial artist. Take on a whole bunch of the ruffians and a sub-boss or two. Oh, and what's his name? Who's the slingshot guy? Usopp.
Usopp, yeah.
Takes on a sub-boss himself.
Yep.
Yeah, a guy who is... Put it this way. This is the craziest thing. Randy, you know, you said this earlier. Mm-hmm. That if you had told yourself... If you had could tell your past self like a year ago... That one of your favorite shows of the year would be the One Piece live action. You would have slapped yourself, your future self, silly. And yet here we are, and
I think we would all rank it as among our favorite TV.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Just every episode just delivers.
Every episode's long.
It's true. Like they're like somewhere between 45 minutes and a little over an hour.
Like many movies, yeah.
There's a dude who kind of did almost like a Popeye riff in this where he... What was he drinking? Alcohol?
I think so,
he would take a big old swig of alcohol. He's one of the fishmen, and they have like kind of heightened powers and weird anime abilities.
Yes.
And then he would spit out blobs of it like bullets.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like, that sounds stupid, right? I know it does. But those scenes were cool.
Yep.
Well, everybody's got an ability, and they're all cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Luffy with his goofy Mr. Fantastic stretching. You know what was great in this finale is... the callback to early on in the season when Luffy said, like, all the best fighters call out their finishing moves.
Yep.
And, by the way, I don't know. That guy actually has a lot of subtle expression in his face, that actor who plays him.
Yeah.
And I don't know quite how they got that performance. It's clear the director had a vision for this. But there's actually a lot of nuance, even though he's somewhat simple in that sense of, like, he's enthusiastic, he stands by his friends, he's... kind of identifies as a pirate,
super
aka
helpful.
A kind of like if he were the D&D character, he'd be chaotic good.
Mm-hmm.
Like definitely he's going to land on the side of break the law to do the right thing. What were you saying, Nick?
He's super hopeful.
So that's why at the end of episode 7, when he's like, he looks really dark, right?
Yeah.
He's like, oh man, one of my friends has been terribly wronged by this person, and he's like, I'm going to rally the troops and go kick his ass. And I was like, it's such a good ending.
Well, I like that this entire season we get introduced to all these characters, but we're given like their backstory.
Yeah,
and there it wasn't like an info dump. It's like some of it is peppered throughout.
You know, there's a few dudes we've met who have been beyond. Luffy is like has like natural ability. He's got his weird powers and natural ability. He's obviously very enthusiastic and stuff, and a good fighter. He's been beaten a couple times, including by the big swordsman guy.
Yeah.
That guy is a good villain.
Yeah, he's a good villain.
He's an interesting dude. The admiral dude, whose name is going to escape me, is a good villain with some interesting reveals.
Yep.
I kind of laughed in a good way at like how ridiculous his kind of motivation turned out to be.
Yeah.
Yes.
And again, I still liked it, but I was like, that's amazing.
The giant swordsman guy fighting with a tiny little blade against Zoro. That was amazing.
Yeah, here's the guy who we've seen is like our among our group is the best swordsman on the crew.
And that is his goal. To be the best swordsman in all.
And he goes up against this dude with this big old Final Fantasy blade, and that guy won't even deign to use it on him. He takes out what would be the equivalent of like a dirk.
Yeah.
The tiniest little dagger, even smaller than that, like a letter opener or smaller, and kicks his ass with that.
Yes.
All the fights have been good. Like, Nick, you told me, you mentioned to us off mic earlier, that a lot of the sets were actually... There's a lot of CG in this.
Yeah, there is.
But good CG, I would say, and even if it's the cartooniness of it. A lot of wire work, too. But you said a lot of the sets were physical.
Yeah, the director of this is a guy who's done plays. Yeah, and so with that in mind, he had to do a lot of... he wanted the actors to have sort of a tactile thing of, like, somewhere to actually move on.
So I wouldn't never have guessed that.
Yeah, they built the ship. I mean, they built a lot of the sets.
I wouldn't have guessed it, but once he said it, it made sense. Because it has that feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, weirdly, like, when the characters interact with each other and just chat back and forth and stuff, I can almost see the sort of... The dialogue does become important. Yeah. You know, this is kind of a larger-than-life dialogue. I still do think it compares pretty reasonably to the sort of vibes of Kung Fu Hustle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With its larger-than-life special effects. But, like, there's actually good dialogue moments in this, too.
Yeah. Yeah, the character stuff is all great. I was shocked by how much I enjoyed this.
Yeah. You know, what I noticed as I was watching that last episode was how good the music was, actually. I don't know if I could easily characterize it. You know, it's at times very boisterous. It doesn't really sound like Pirates of the Caribbean, but it has some of the same energy propelling it forward, so that when they're at sea or in a big fight or something, there's a lot of high energy to it. But the sad scenes are these very emotional beats, like the one with the chef and his mentor saying farewell and stuff, which is one of my favorite scenes in it, are really backed by the music if you rewatch them. Yeah, this one was cool. They set up a fun villain team up for next season.
Yeah.
Some character I don't know.
That was the Stinger, right?
The Stinger, yeah. You got a lot of sort of big moments. Yeah, this also compares to the Fast and Furious with the family sort of vibe and the their picnics and barbecues at the end.
Uh-huh.
There was a bit of that too. Hey, we got you a gift. Hey, we're doing this now. This feels like one where I think we're recommending it, even if you think you might not like it.
I don't think any one of us expected to like this as much as we
did.
The other thing I was going to mention is it is spooky season. I know Nick and I both have started rewatching or watching some horror movies. Nick, you rewatched Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years since I checked in. It's always.
I don't think I've seen it in a few years either.
It holds up.
Okay.
Completely. I don't know if it's my favorite of the Cornetto trilogy or of any of Edgar Wright's films.
Right.
Where I still think maybe Hot Fuzz is probably my favorite.
Yeah.
Also, I loved Last Night in Soho and a couple of his others outside of that. But this is probably one of my favorite zombie films. And I'm not a big zombie guy.
It's really good.
I think it kind of juggles the scariness of zombies with the comedy and then the heartfelt of, like, the family relationships between him and his mom and his surrogate dad, his asshole friend that he loves, but he kind of comes to realize he's an idiot.
Isn't their roommate the one that they both have? Isn't it Peter Serafinowicz playing him?
It is.
Which
it is
great.
Peter. He is amazing. I mean, a lot of these people that show up, I mean, Martin Freeman is, like, in a blip.
Yeah,
As the boyfriend of the other group.
Yeah, they're the girl from space.
Yeah, the girl from space.
Yeah.
I just think all the jokes land. There's a lot of that. We were talking about a couple weeks back, Dave, about the weird phenomenon where all the shit is happening in the backdrop. And, like, he sells televisions for a living at, like, a Radio Shack or something.
Yeah.
And he's, like, pausing through, like, the news, which is talking about, like, big zombie things going on, and they're just flipping through it like it doesn't even matter. It's like, and there's all, like, this
with
radio
all kind
play.
Of input in the, that we get in the world right now, it would be easy to kind of just, for something like that, to sort of start and not even be aware of it.
Yeah. Right. But I love this movie. It still holds up for me.
I watched a new one to me. I watched the 2019 Candyman.
Yep.
By Nia DaCosta, who I think is directing The Marvels.
Oh, is she?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, interesting.
I'm not positive on that, but I thought it was Nia DaCosta doing The Marvels.
Let me see.
So, Nick, you've seen this. Dave has not. Dave's seen the original Candyman.
Right, and you've seen the remake Candyman, but not the original Candyman. I say remake, but I believe it's also it's sort of quasi-remake, but also a sequel to it.
It's more of a continuation from what I can tell. So, Basically, in the original Candyman, and correct me if I'm wrong, Virginia Madsen, is she the lead?
Yes.
Okay, her voice is in this one.
Okay.
Basically, there's a story of like a thing that happened in Cabrini Green.
Yep.
And about the return of Candyman, and that Candyman is this character from the like slavery era, like the 1800s, yep. who was like tortured and killed, and then became a urban legend kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So in this one, there is a an academic, or I guess he's not an academic. He's a
artist. Isn't he?
Well, the lead is an artist.
Yeah.
But the guy he's talking to, like, runs a dry cleaners or something.
Oh, right.
But he has this weird academic fascination with Candyman.
Yep. And he's talking about how that was a vibe in the original, too. They were just, it was like an urban folklore class that Virginia Madsen was taking. And her, like, for her, like, thesis project, she was, you know, visiting Cabrini Green to try and investigate.
Okay, so something similar happens here.
Uh-huh.
The guy he's talking to basically tells him about numerous Candymen throughout the year. Like, it's a thing that happens. Like, there was a guy, when this guy was a little boy, the lead artist, there was a guy who like came out of the wall. It opens with the scene.
Uh-huh.
He's like down in the basement washing, and there's a crack in the wall, and you're not sure if it's real or not.
Yeah.
And then a guy with like one of those medical hooks.
Yeah.
Like comes out and is like smiling really weird and awkward, and he has candy in his hands, and the kids start screaming, and basically it's revealed later the cops came down and basically killed this guy.
Uh huh.
And all he was like a basically just deranged. He was like a strange guy,
yeah. Right? But he had like mental issues.
He had
or
mental
something.
Issues, and he was literally just offering him candy.
Yeah.
And that this is a thing that happens throughout generally. Like, there's all kinds of guys who have this like this kind of hook for hand, and the candy thing, and that like it is a sort of mirror of black trauma.
Yeah.
And then the new artist guy seems like he's basically almost being transformed into the new Candyman.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's people being murdered around him. It seems like he thinks he brought the ghost back accidentally. His girlfriend is a person who's like very successful in the art world. He's not so successful. She's like a dealer in art and a gallery. She puts on shows and that kind of thing. And it's getting into like their personality while he's like sort of, she's starting to think maybe he's killing people. It's got a lot of interesting thematic stuff. I feel like the story's a little jumpy. I thought the plot doesn't quite come together. But as like ideas wise, there's some really cool stuff.
Actually kind of how I felt about the original too.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It definitely feels a piece of the original.
It's Jordan Peele produced. And it definitely has that feel. Is she directing the Marvels?
Or she is. No, you were right. I hadn't realized that.
That classic Peele feel.
Yeah, a little bit. it's got a very solid ending. I thought the ending was really good. I dug it. I didn't love it, but I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah.
The other thing I made time for so far, we're 2 days into Halloween, I watched Werewolf by Night again.
Right, which
you just watched recently.
I rewatched it recently, rather on a whim. I think it was one of those, let's find something that I don't have to pay too close attention to while I'm eating dinner. Yep. I don't want to watch something kind of new sometimes.
I was doing a graphic novel review.
And then I was like pretty immediately hooked back again by it.
Yeah.
Actually, for people who haven't seen it, just in brief, this Disney has done 2 1-hour specials on Disney Plus. A sort of Halloween special with this one, and then a Christmas special with the Guardians.
Yep.
Guardians of the Galaxy. And this one, one of the things I liked about it is filmed in black and white, obviously, directed by
Giacchino.
Michael Giacchino,
right.
Composer for many a Marvel movie.
Yeah. This is his directorial debut.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, how did he do something so good so for his first debut?
It has a very deliberate 70s feel.
Yeah, well, I'd say 70s and also like 40s, 50s.
Yeah, weirdly also, yeah, it does feel like 70s, but also, yeah, like
Universal
it feels like
Monsters.
Hammer Horror, Universal Monsters, yeah.
We open not quite knowing much anything about our lead, who's a little bit unusual for a Marvel guy. He's like...
he's sort of quiet.
He's a quiet guy, he's a Latino guy in his like 40s,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And he's got this kind of like... I would look like it could be like tribal makeup on or something like that. Arriving at this kind of gothic estate to contest with other monster hunters for the prize of the, what do they call
it? Bloodstone.
Yeah. The Bloodstone,
this ties into a somewhat obscure Marvel character, Ulysses Bloodstone.
Yeah, and his daughter Elsa Bloodstone. If you follow enough Marvel, though, you'll have probably heard of them as monster hunters.
Yep.
And Everybody is there to, like, they want the power of the Bloodstone. So these are some, like, kind of hardcore monster hunters. There's definitely a sense that these aren't the best of people.
But the, and they're all great, like, their look and their vibe. Like,
yeah,
the
Evil
weird
David
Scottish
Bowie.
Dude.
Yeah, there's big,
Evil David Bowie.
Burly Scottish dude, Evil David Bowie.
Not Blade.
And Elsa Bloodstone herself shows up. Yeah. She's the wayward daughter of the Bloodstone family.
The black sheep
of the family, considered a disappointment by this very domineering mother-in-law.
Yeah, mother-in-law, not her mom.
Who's, yeah, like, real into all the weird, creepy family culty traditions, which it seems like Elsa didn't like. And then, like, the hunt begins, though. And like, again, we don't know really anything about Jack.
Yeah.
Jack Russell, the werewolf by night. But mainly just Jack in this. Yeah. Early on, he says to, like, them, he says, they're talking about, like, the how many monsters they've killed. He says, like, 30 or 40 or something.
No, she's giving their readout, and she says something like, you've killed over 100. But it's not implied, it's not monsters. Basically, like, he's a killer.
Oh.
He has over 100 kills.
Do you think that she... Did she know
I
what
think she
was getting?
I think she knew he was a werewolf.
Right.
But I think she knew she was... I think she knew he was a monster, but actually, she doesn't seem like it. But she clearly, like, somehow he had managed to sneak his way in here as a hunter, even though he had... His kills were all as a werewolf.
Right. Which is interesting. He doesn't seem like a... necessarily a killer guy,
yeah.
Though he does when he monsters out.
When he monsters out, he kills a whole bunch of people.
So I guess so. But he kills for justice.
Do we want to say who the monster they're hunting is, or we should leave that?
I mean,
if you
it's been
want
around
it.
For.
Yeah, but if people haven't seen it though, I don't want them to almost spoil.
I'm a little torn. It's a deep enough cut that, like,
it's
if you don't read
really
a lot of Marvel comics, you might not know who it is even when they reveal it.
They nail it.
You might be like,
perfect.
Oh, who's Blorko?
It's not Blorko.
But yes, yes, it turns out he has a connection to the monster, a friendship.
They're like
that
buddies.
I don't think it's particularly from the comics.
No, it's
but,
original. It's invented.
But I really like their take on his character, where he is. This kind of he seems fairly self-assured.
Yep.
But he's also not like he's not like a shit talker. He's kind of a quiet guy. He does, but he, like, kind of, when he starts hitting it off with Elsa when they're trapped in a tomb on the estate, there's some good dialogue in there. They both kind of seem like people with essentially dark pasts. They're not the dark pasts we might be familiar with,
right.
Like being the black sheep of a monster hunter family or being a werewolf man.
I mean, I'm familiar with that.
I really liked all their dialogue together. I loved the vibe of the grounds, which it seems like it's got, like, you know, like hedge mazes and what looks like almost like Grecian temple type things, and so there's lots of places to hide.
It's a great set design.
It's a great bit of set design, and if you've seen old silent movies and 30s 40s movies, you'll see some of these kind of really cool set pieces like that. So it's a really cool homage, and it gets in and it gets out. It's just like what, an hour or a little more
or less.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's they're going to do a colorized version of this. They're going to color it like the Hammer horror films.
Yeah,
released in
probably
October
some
20th.
Gaudy blood in there.
Yeah. But this is worth a watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I will take a peek at the color one just to see.
Maybe
but
I'm
like,
curious. But it works so well in black and white.
It works so well in black and white. Yeah, they do like old school titling on it and all that stuff. Ironically, I don't think Giacchino did the music for it.
I think he did.
Or he
no,
did?
I'm pretty
okay.
sure he did.
It would kind of make the most sense. I just was not 100% sure.
All right. I think that wraps it up for us this time. We'll be back next time with more. Until that time,
yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.